Each day, all over the world, thousands of healthcare learners experience the power of simulation. This is the BS Podcast.
Wait, what?
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 Beyond Simulation, exploring the stories of the people behind these masterfully implemented simulations.
Each episode discovers the real stories of how these connoisseurs got into simulation and why they stayed. This is the Behind the Music Podcast of the world of simulation.
My name is Christine Park, and I am the director of the Simulation and Integrative Learning Institute at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. And one thing about me that's not simulation is that I recently have discovered boxing for fitness and learned that a single one-minute round of shadow boxing can make you totally exhausted.
Get out of here. I didn't know that, Christine. I'm Bob Kaiser, and I'm the associate director here at SAIL. And one thing that's not simulation related is that my hometown is Bloomington Normal, Illinois, and it is the hometown of actor McLean Stevenson.
Right. Okay, Bob, ready to talk some BS?
Let's do it.
Before we actually introduce our guest, I heard something in the news that I just have to tell you about.
Okay.
It's about an eight-year-old from Minneapolis, actually, who called out NPR for a lack of dinosaur stories, even though the name of the radio show is All Things Considered. And this is what the kid said. This is what the feedback he gave. My name is Leo. I'm 8 years old. I listen to All Things Considered in the car with my mom. I listen a lot. I don't hear much about nature or dinosaurs or things like that. Maybe you should call your things newsy things considered, since I don't get to hear about all the things. Or please talk more about dinosaurs and cool things. So, Bob, how does that piece of feedback strike you?
I was going to say it's very specific feedback. I love it. And I just got thinking about something. I would have to agree with it. I don't think I've heard a lot of things about dinosaurs on All Things Considered. So good for him. Love it.
All right. Anyway, well, let's get to our guest. Our guest today is Dr. Semreen Vohra. She is the medical director of simulation at Children's Minnesota, and she's also a board certified emergency physician. Welcome, Dr. Vohra.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hi.
So, Semreen, what are three things that you're professionally known for?
Well, over the last couple of years, I have been working on a project around using simulation to better understand implicit bias and its role in healthcare disparities. And that's really been something that I've kind of talked about at a couple of different venues and have been working on this research project. So that's been something I've been known for across the country now. And really understanding, can we harness simulation to either do trainings around implicit bias or even capture some of the implicit bias that maybe happens in our clinical setting that leads to these healthcare disparities because it's so elusive. The other thing that that's led me to that I'm now known for is the intersection in general of simulation with diversity, equity, and inclusion work. You know, so it's one thing to think about simulation as a tool, but to specifically look at implicit bias or how to dismantle systemic racism. And then it's another to think about how much power we hold when we do simulations to teach or to test systems. And the idea of how important it is that when we are doing those, that we overlay a lens of DEI on all of that work, because it has such power and impact, long-lasting impact when we do these simulations. So that's another topic that I've been really starting to be known for across the country in some of the pediatric simulation groups. We do have a paper on this topic coming out next month in the SSH Journal, and I'm really excited about some of the collaborations that hopefully will come out of that work as well. And then I guess a third thing is probably within my organization, professionally I'm known for, you know, as a medical director of SIM. It was a new role when I started about almost five years ago. And I've definitely been known for saying, hey, let's sim that and let's sim this, and pulling people that maybe didn't even realize what simulation could do or what simulation is, not only into doing SIMs with us, but then running with them and presenting at some of our national platforms on simulation, which has been new for a lot of people across our organization, teams like our quality and safety team or value and clinical excellence team or our nursing professional team, really just pushing the envelope with simulation and sharing it nationally. So I've kind of been known for that within our organization over the last couple of years.
That is really great. So I have a quick question for you, because a lot of people, especially clinicians, are very focused on teaching the clinical aspects of healthcare, which is to say sort of the biomedical stuff, getting the right diagnosis, those kinds of things. So what would you say to someone who was a skeptic around using simulation for DEI?
That is a great question. So you think about simulation, right? So why do we use it for those clinical things? Oftentimes, it's for many reasons. Oftentimes, they're for high-risk scenarios, maybe low frequency, or maybe just high risk that we want to practice before we go to a patient, right? We're no longer in that model of see one, do one, teach one. We're in a model of, oh gosh, we got to make sure our patients are safe, and we learn in a way that keeps our patients safe. And I think you think about DEI and you think about healthcare disparities and how deep they run across, you know, you think about systemic racism and healthcare disparities. And these disparities are caught, there are many reasons why they happen, right? And so similarly, we really need to get to the root of those and practice what are the skills that are impacting the care that we're providing that leads to some of these disparities. And it's really hard to get at that in the clinical environment. But it's, again, ties just as importantly to patient safety, right? And for those who don't believe that, look up the data, right? The maternal mortality rates. There's data that's come out that, you know, I'm in Children's Minnesota and Pediatrics, and there's data that shows babies in the NICU that are Black babies, Latino babies, don't receive the same care, don't have the same outcomes, which, you know, to us translate to don't receive the same care, than white babies. And why is that? And we don't know, right? I'm not saying, oh, that's, you know, but we do know, and this isn't news, this isn't new, right? We do know that these disparities are tied at some level to systemic racism, so a lot of policies and procedures that have it embedded, and to implicit bias. We, of course, every healthcare professional wants to do their best, right? We want to treat every single patient the same, just like we want to get that procedure right on that patient. We want to have that medical knowledge, so we do simulation, right? And we want to treat every patient the same. So let's do simulation and figure out where's our gap and practice fixing it, practice mitigation strategies so that we can do this in the DEI setting just like we want to do it in the clinical setting.
Great. Love that. I was taking notes.
Right. Such powerful work. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
So Samarine, I'm interested in the Samarine not in simulation. So each episode we spin a random number generator to get a number to see how many facts we want to hear from you that are not on your CV.
Uh-oh.
So today the number is three.
Okay.
So I want to hear three things that are not on your CV, but rather just fun things about Samarine.
Yeah, I could probably come up with three. So I think number one, that's always top of mind, especially right now while we're on summer break, is that I have four kids. I don't know if this is what I plan. They span the spectrum of ages. And so my oldest is 13 and my youngest is about almost 9 months. And then I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. And that I feel like, although it's not on my CV, Bob, I have to figure out how to get it on my CV because it definitely takes a huge chunk of my time and it's more than a full-time job. So there's that. And, you know, I feel like I could figure out how to, the skills I'm learning in raising a 13-year-old right now probably fit on my CV somewhere.
Completely agree.
So that's one thing. I guess another that often people are surprised by is that I majored in Spanish in college, not biology or biochem, knowing I was going to be a doctor. I majored in Spanish and I lived in Spain for a semester. So if I was to, like, pick a second home, I'd want to go back to Spain, southern Spain in particular. I was in Granada, and it was just one of the most incredible experiences ever in learning the history and the culture there and the friends that I made. So that's something I think a lot of people is not on my CV. Well, maybe that's cheating because I do at the bottom of my, like, education have that I, like, studied there. So, but you know.
We'll give you credit. And I have to say, Samarine, I've known you for years. I did not know that.
Yeah.
It is so cool. One thing I love about doing this podcast is that we, Christy and I, you know, we obviously know everybody we're talking to. We're mostly know everybody. And we're learning all these cool, fascinating things. I had no idea. So we'll count that one.
There
so
you go.
One
we'll
more.
Count that one.
Give us one more.
One more. So I made my little sister's wedding cake. It was a 3-tiered cake. I'm not great at it. And that was the first big cake, 3-tiered cake. I practiced for weeks. So my kids and my family ate a lot of cake. It tasted amazing. There was a horrible like rainstorm. And again, I'm not a professional, so I was like still trying to figure it out. And we're trying to figure out how to get the cake from the car to the hall in the rain with an umbrella. And there's like, you know, it's three tiers. So it was like a huge bottom tier and a middle tier. I have to give credit to my family, my husband, my sisters. And we got it in there. We got it stacked. It was like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but like it stood straight. It tasted good. And it had this amazing cake topper that I didn't make. I ordered that was a replica of my sister and her husband. So it worked out great. I'm not sure I'd do it again. So that's something I think probably people don't know about me. I love decorating cakes. I just haven't had a lot of time to learn it. But yeah.
Inquiring minds need to know what was the flavor of the cake.
Ooh, I'm glad you asked. So we had three different flavors, actually. The top one was strawberry because that's her favorite, and I knew they would freeze that and eat it later. The bottom one was for me, although it was a giant piece of cake. It was a chai-flavored chocolate cake. And it was incredible, very moist.
That sounds great. Well, as you practice, we will be your guinea pigs. So
that's right.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely need people who are willing to eat cake. Good or bad, though, you got to take it, you know.
Never ate a cake I didn't like, so I think I'm
there
good.
So, Samreen, we now want to know about kid Samreen. So, take us back in time to an age, I don't know, less than 12. Tell us about your inner child.
That's an interesting question. You know, in less than 12, I've been thinking a lot about my 13-year-old self because of my 13-year-old daughter, but I could go less than 12.
Oh, sure. That's okay.
Yeah, I think kid Samreen. I was very talkative and energetic. Those are the positive things. Sort of positive. I know in school, talkative was not awesome. I used to get like written up a lot for that. But I also, thinking back, especially with my daughter, and thinking about just who was kid Samreen, and I think about my dual identity, right? I'm Pakistani/Indian-American, and I'm really just American, right? I'm Chicagoan. I know you guys are in Chicago. I lived there my whole life. And that was really hard. And I think as a kid, especially you pick the age 12, right? 12, 13, that age, like it was hard holding a dual identity. There were so many pieces of that that I look back on now and realize how much it shaped me and how, and it took a long time though to get to the positive side of that. I think as a kid, it really impacted my confidence and it impacted trying to figure out who I was. So that talkative, energetic me, I think was lost a little bit for a little while. And so I think about kid Samreen and I think about her a lot recently, right? All the ages that I have and think about what could I have done for her to tell her she was enough so that she felt it now, right? That she carried that with her. So I think about that a lot. I think it took me a while to find my confidence, and that kid in me is just now trying to find its way back. So, yeah. I don't know if that totally answered your question. Maybe you wanted something more positive, but I think that was truly who I was as a kid.
Well, I mean, we are who we are. And what do you tell your daughter?
It's exactly what I said at the end there. What I realized is I have to tell her she's enough, no matter what, all the mistakes she makes, all the things that I think, oh God, like, is she going to be okay? I can think those in my head, but out loud, I need to tell her she's enough because she is. Whoever she is, she's enough. And I was enough then. And I didn't, you know, the positive end of that is I went into high school and I found my people, and my older sister was a senior in high school while I was a freshman, and that helped a lot. I had this guidance and I found that it was okay to be me. And then that Samreen, that kid Samreen, went all out, and like I was really passionate about whatever I wanted to do, right? So I'd learn something new and I'd come home and immediately want to implement and be like, well, we got to do it this way. And so it was nice to have found that part of me, but it took a little bit. So I would tell my daughter that she is enough. Who she is enough, and she needs to build that and be confident in that.
I love that. I think we all can hear that. Thank you. And that passion that you were talking about as your teenage self, I still see today. And just as you were describing the work you're doing in simulation around DEI, around all of these passionate topics, so take us back a little bit, and how did you even get into simulation?
That's a really good question, because it was definitely not the path. That kid Samarine was not like, hey, I'm going to do simulation. I know the kid Samarine was like, I want to be a physician. I want to be a doctor. That was always a dream. I think I wanted to be a cardiologist, which actually ties now that I think back on it, right? I feel passionate about a lot of things. I always thought the heart, right, the emotions, and I thought that's what I want to deal with, right, the heart. That was like fifth grade essay, I remember. And that's not what I became. I'm an emergency physician, but I think that passion is what led me to sim. So while I was finishing up my residency, I was having my second child, and actually I had a miscarriage, and that was really hard in the middle of residency. And then I was in my third year, I was about to have my second child, and everybody else in my class had like signed their contracts, knew where they were going to go to work. And I was like, oh my God, am I done? Like, can I retire with life now? Because it was so hard getting through those three years, right? And so everybody's signing contracts, getting jobs. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to keep going in emergency medicine. This has been so hard. And I was sitting in an admin meeting, and the attendings were talking about simulation. I did my residency in Peoria. They had just built this like multimillion-dollar simulation center, the jump training simulation center, and it was incredible. And they were talking about how sim is the next big thing, although I think it was already a big thing then. But it was really like a lot of the training. We were moving very fast with simulation, and I thought, that's interesting. And I Googled under the table simulation fellowships. I found one at UIC, and I thought, I need to get back to Chicago. This is what I'm going to do. I knew very little about it. And I jumped right into it. I met the fellowship director, which was Dr. Valerie Dobiez at the time, and she was just incredible. And honestly, maybe it wasn't the sim. I want to say it was all the sim, right? You're asking me why it was sim, but in that moment, it wasn't the sim. It was that she showed me what future could look like. At that time, when I felt like I was at the end of my rope, my kids were small, right? I just had a second baby. Things felt so hard. Her kids were grown, and she did global health, and she did simulation, and she did these things that I was like, there's hope. There's this light. And I could see what 20 years from now could look like. And so I jumped headfirst, passionately as I do, into that, took this fellowship. And you know, that's really kind of when I started the sim. While I was doing simulation, before I took this job, so sim, I was doing the fellowship, and it's kind of like, okay, what do I do next? And I was deathly afraid before this fellowship of doing simulation. Like, it was so scary. You think about how humbling it is to learn, right? And so I would never have thought, oh, I'm going to do a sim fellowship. And then I would never have thought I'd be a medical director of sim. But while I was in that phase of my life, my father got really sick. And he was diagnosed with plasma cell leukemia and was told he didn't have very long, and it was a very poor prognosis. And during that time, I was with him, you know, at all of his appointments and really helping my mom, who was his primary caretaker, navigate that healthcare system. And I very distinctly remember one particular incident with a physician. You know, my dad wanted to fight, and he did. He actually went into remission, which they said wasn't possible. His hematologist was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe his numbers. So he had wanted to fight, and all along that he had stated that was his goal. And so we were supportive of that goal. And I remember he had an acute illness, so he wasn't like, you know, acutely passing away, but he had an acute illness. He was in the hospital trying to get him back home over that acute illness. And one of the physicians, I said, okay, what do we need to do to get him home? And obviously I'm talking about that particular hospital stay. And she looked at me and she was like, well, make him DNR. Do not resuscitate. And this is this conversation where my dad is ill, and I'm, you know, and I just stood there in shock that someone could speak that way, a physician, a caretaker, a healthcare professional, in a situation like that. And I still can feel, as I speak about it, I can feel the emotions that I felt in that moment, that, wow, like, that is not the way to communicate. Is, you know, wearing the dual hats, right? I was the daughter in that situation wearing that hat. But when I went back into my healthcare hat and put that on as a physician, I thought, oh my gosh. And so even during my fellowship, my focus on my project was communication, teaching communication skills through simulation. And I really honed in on that and thought, and end of life's communication skills, and really thinking about how do we harness simulation for that. And that's really where my passion for simulation really just took root. And then I took this position, and here I am. And we talked about DEI, all of that. A lot of that is teaching people communication, how to bring humanism into medicine and into the healthcare professionals. I don't know if that answer is maybe too long, but that really, you know, was kind of my journey into SIM and why I'm so still passionate about what I do.
No, that answer was perfect. No, that wasn't too long at all. And we can still hear your passion. And I'm grateful for the work that you're doing in this. And that it's interesting because in this field, we're also consumers of the product that we're putting out there and we're affected by it. So thank you.
That's a great point, right? Yeah, it's the full circle with simulation. Yeah. So, yeah.
I also want to really take a moment to mark with appreciation what you said a few minutes ago about showing you what the future could look like. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. I actually just recently been reading a book that described hope not as a phenomenon, but as a hope as a discipline. And so hope is the journey, but somebody has to show you that door to walk through. And I feel like I can really see that in the story that you shared.
Mm. Wow, that is incredible to hear it articulated that way, Christine. Yeah, that's exactly what that moment was. And hearing you articulate it that way, I feel like is going to make it easier for me to show that to others as well, right? I didn't realize, you're right. Hope is something that needs to be shown. Like I couldn't even, until I met her, I couldn't see it. And then when I saw it, I couldn't unsee it, right? And then it's been, and that's what's carried me through. And even now, it's years later, but kids are still small and I'm still struggling. But like, I could see it still because I remember seeing it in her and it's definitely given me hope. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. And so speaking of dual hats, we're going to explore another perhaps imaginary hat. and the question is this. So if you were prevented from doing anything you do now professionally, so no medical practice, no simulation, what would you be doing for a job? And for the sake of this exercise, there's no financial worries at all, so you can pick anything.
I like that. No financial worries. Anything. So there's so many things. I'd do them all. If there were no financial worries, I'd be like, I do a ton of things. I want to write a book and I want to, but if I had to pick, I would have loved, well, maybe two, I can't pick between these two things. I would have loved to be a game show host. I still remember doing being the host of a show for a fifth grade play. And it was like a play on Price is Right, and it was The Life is Right, and it was about like not doing drugs and stuff, and so I still remember that, and I was like, oh my God, that would be so much fun to do that. And the other thing that I can pick between is I love to travel, and I'd love to be a better photographer. So like, wouldn't it be so cool to travel the world and take pictures for something like National Geographic, or like just seeing the beauty of the world and the people around the world would just be incredible. And then to be able to capture it, that would be amazing. Not that I have the skills to do that, but that's what I would do.
Those both sound great.
I agree. I want to see your game show. So if you want to come up with that, that would be great. So
I need to create one. Yeah. Maybe it can tie to like simulations somehow. And we do a little
we should do it at Ask Yours like that. That'd be great.
That's such a good idea.
Thank you. I thought it was. If Aspie's listening. Okay. So one great thing about simulation is that we can do it over. So of course, in real life, we can't do that. But if we could, what is one thing in your life that you would do over or do differently?
So I try. That's a tough question for me because the me maybe a few years ago would have come up with 100 things. And I've tried to grow away from that and say I wouldn't do anything over, right? Because everything was meant to happen the way it was. But if I was pushed to pick something, you know, it's been, and I can't believe it's been this long, I guess. My dad passed away the first year I was here, so it's been at least 4 years. And I would, near the end of his life, I was so caught up. I had taken this new job, and it was really stressful. And I had three kids, and I was traveling, actually. I was commuting back to Chicago from, I was in Minnesota with my new job, and I was commuting every weekend back to Chicago. It was extremely stressful, and his illness was a little over a year. And near the end, I think I just was really tired. And if I was to do that part over, I would have had a little more patience and been in the moment more, particularly with him. I still recall there was a moment where I was just caught up in my meetings and a lot of things, and he was sitting in his chair, his recliner, and he reached out his arm, and I knew what he was asking. He was asking me to come sit by him, but I had so many other things I had to get to that day, and I walked past, and I said, I'll be back, and I wasn't, because that was the last time I saw him. So I would do that over. There aren't a lot of things, I think, at this point I would look back on life and say I would do over, but I would do those last few weeks over. I didn't know they were the last few weeks for him. So that would be a do-over. But, you know, even having said that, I've also, over the last couple of years, come to accept that that's how it was meant to be. I know that I did everything I could for that whole year before with him, and I was there every moment I could be. So, you know, there's a reason for all things, and I think it was meant to be that way, because I've used that moment to really be present in the moment every single time since then, right? And to try to teach my kids the same thing.
Yeah, so. I was going to say thank you on a personal level for reminding me to be present. That's day-to-day stuff with work and everything. It's sometimes mm-hmm. we forget. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that reminder.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I was going to add to that also, I just love the acceptance that you describe about saying I was tired. I feel like culturally there's such a bias against people ever saying that.
Absolutely.
Because that means you're weak or yes. I don't know what.
Yeah.
And I love that I should say that more.
Absolutely. And you say culturally, I feel like when you say culture, I don't know if you mean, because healthcare culture, there's a bias against it. And I will say for me, Pakistani Indian culture, there's this bias, right? Like you just keep going. And so yeah, absolutely. And I think I will add, though, that didn't come easy. Even me being able to say, okay, I'm trying to accept it. It's an everyday effort to say that to myself and not go down that other path of regret of if and should. So, yeah.
Yes, I hear you. In Korean culture, actually, people like to say to each other, almost as a greeting, I'm so busy.
Oh,
And sort of love to converse about how busy they are. So that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. I mean, and we do that here, right? Like and somebody said to me the other day, it was really funny because they said it together. They said, well, I'm so busy, but I don't like buying into this busy culture idea. And I was like, I think you just did. So it's important to remind ourselves, right? How we speak and what we're saying to try to make that match, right? We want to be somewhere, but we have to make effort to be at that place and to say, okay, I'm not going to say I'm really busy. Let's figure out like where I am, what are my priorities and that sort of thing.
So true. Okay, so flip side, what is one thing, and it could be a small thing, that you would absolutely do over the same?
Maybe a small thing, but life-altering, maybe a huge thing. I would definitely marry my husband again. There have been a lot of ups and downs, and there have been many moments where I'm like, oh my God, I would never do that again, because we were really young. I was 19, and we've both changed a lot since then. And I always wondered, gosh, if I went back, right, and I did it again, but in this moment, I would do it again, and I would go through those ups and downs again, and stick by each other. And it's not perfect, but we're still trying. We're going to grow old together, hopefully.
I love that. Okay, Samreen, are you ready to, speaking of game shows, play a game?
Ooh, yes. Can I use my game show like voice?
We expect nothing less. Nothing less. So we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock, and we're just going to ask you random questions. They're very questions meant with short answers. And we're just going to see how many we can get through in 60 seconds. Just say the first thing that comes to your mind. Christine will ask the first question, and after she asks it, I will start the clock. So, ready? Here we go.
Okay, Samreen, what is the last thing that you literally read other than your email?
there's a book called A Place for Us that I finished reading. Oh, actually, no, I read another book after that. It's called Amal Unbound, about a Pakistani girl in Pakistan. And it was really cool. I literally read it in a day, like 2 days.
What is the last place you traveled to by plane? And when was it?
By plane, where did we fly? Most likely it was California to visit my sister. She's in Southern California, so we probably flew to LAX, I think, over our holiday a couple months ago.
And what gives you joy?
My family, so all of my family, right? So my husband, my kids, my sister and my mom are here, and her kids, and my other sister, and my husband's brothers and their kids. Like, I just, family brings me a lot of joy, as well as pain sometimes, but I'm going to focus on the joy.
Sounds great.
I got to ask you, is there life beyond Earth?
For sure. I mean, huge, expansive world. There's definitely life out there. Not sure what it looks like, but yes.
Okay, is there life out there, and do they do simulation?
That's a really good question now. I mean, they're probably simulating life on Earth to figure out, like, why do we do things the way we do? Because they can't quite figure
it out. What is going on with those people? Right.
Maybe if we simulate it, we can understand the process.
Love it. Okay, what is the one compliment that you really liked?
That's a very hard question for me, but I will say, recently I was telling someone that a colleague of mine who is really detail-oriented, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I just can't be detail-oriented. That's not my strength. And she's like, yeah, but Samreen, I have never met anybody that can multitask the way you can. And I think that she said that because I have a million kids running into my meetings all the time, and I just keep on going. But I appreciated that, right? Focus on the strength. I was on a meeting once, and the person on the meeting, I was presenting something really important. I wanted her to hear my presentation, and in the middle of the meeting, she spilled her coffee. And so she jumped up, and she was like, my coffee's on my keyboard, and it's on my, and I was, and she's like, I gotta go. And I was like, okay, let's just, okay, the first thing is your electronic. Is it on your keyboard? Like, just wipe that down first. So she did, and then it was on her wall, and I was like, the wall can wait. So I'm going to keep telling you about this. It was my DEI work. And I was like, I'm going to keep telling you about this. The wall can wait. Like, just make sure you pull your electronics out of the way. Is your phone okay? And then I kept presenting. And then she calmed down and she listened to the rest. And then she told everybody else. She was like, yeah, Samreen, just, you know, she caught me. Like, she just kept going. So I can definitely multitask with many distractions. And so I do that in the ED, but I probably do it more at home.
I love that.
So I feel like maybe that compliment really hit home. I was like, yes, I could actually accept that and be like, that's true.
Yeah, multitask and prioritize. So cool.
All right, so we're coming around the last bend here in our conversation, and I want to invite you to think about one person who has been meaningful to you in your life, and it doesn't have to be anyone that you necessarily know. What did you learn from them, or what do you admire about them?
That's a tough question, because I think there's a lot of people that I was just thinking yesterday that without them, I would not be here. If I had to pick one, I think I would pick my sister, my older sister. She, you know, we talk about dual identities and the struggle I had. She was the oldest girl in my family, and I think it was even harder for her, and she had to push so many barriers to get to where she is, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. So once, you know, she pushed the barriers down, I just walked right through. And so I think I learned resilience from her to keep moving forward and to push those barriers. And she's really been the one that, definitely that's what I've learned from her, is just got to push a little harder to get to where you need to be and push back sometimes.
Wow. She sounds like someone I'd love to know.
Yeah.
So Samreen, what is one hope that you have for simulation in the future?
Well, I hope the aliens really are simulating us, and maybe they're simulating our simulations so that they can show us what's the next big frontier in simulation. I think that I hope that everybody continues. And I think simulation, we do a pretty good job at this, but sometimes it's just really hard to do, really think outside the box, right? We think we're thinking outside the box, but really it's still the simulation box or the things that we know, because it's hard to know the things we don't know, right? You don't even know the things you don't know. So I hope that people still keep pushing and trying to get to that area, the things we don't even know we don't know, and figure out how can we use simulation in some of these areas where things are maybe gray, right? DEI, racism, you know, we think about all the ways we're using simulation for these topics. I'm sure there's other topics we don't even know we don't know yet, and things like that. So I really hope people keep pushing the boundaries, and people outside of simulation, I hope we can get them to see that too. If they could wear that lens, I think it could make huge differences in our world, even outside of healthcare. I hope that it continues to grow in that way.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun. I miss being in Chicago, and I miss both of you guys, and I really appreciated being invited to this podcast.
Well, come on over. Come on over anytime. Thank you for listening. This has been Beyond Simulation with your hosts, Christine Park and Bob Kaiser, and our guest, Dr. Samreen Vohra. See you for the next episode.